Welcome, John.
Thank you. I'm now the hawk. My name is Don.
Hi, Don.
Where do I start? Well, as you can tell, I'm from the same country as Rob, from Canada. I grew up just on the border, the French part of Canada. So I have the, luck, I guess, speaking two languages, which is being in two worlds. It's a real benefit. I want to thank Peter and the group for asking me to speak. It's a real honor to speak here. It's an honor to speak in an AA meeting. So where do I start? Well, I was born in Halifax, Nova Scotia in 1950. My dad was in the Navy down there, and we moved back to Quebec when I was just a child, a year old, and I was brought up there. I was the oldest in the family, my mother is from Nova Scotia, my dad's from Quebec. My mom didn't speak French, so we spoke English in the household. I was the oldest. And my father's name was Jacques, which if you translate it in English is James, which is my middle name. My first name is Donald. My brother, my sister below me is Jacqueline, after Jack. My other brother was Jacko, my other brother was Jerry. And I always said, how come my name's Donna, and I'm the oldest? And my father's name is Jack. And they talk about the square peg in the round hole. Like, I felt like I didn't fit in. And, the old man, I called him the old man, but, you know, God bless him, he tried his best. And, he was hard on me. And, I got a lot of beatings. Sometimes I ended up in the hospital. And I found out when I was in my 20s that he wasn't really my father. He wasn't my biological father. He was in the Navy, so he was away for 3-6 months at a time. And while he was away, my mother was seeing another fellow, and she got pregnant. And he just assumed it was his, and he married her 3 weeks before I was born. And he was resentful, and he drank a lot. He came from a big French-Canadian family, 8 kids. And, he was brought up a certain way, and he didn't kill me, so, he tried his best. I survived. But what happened is, for me, is I always felt less than. I always felt inferior, and, feeling inferior, I always tried to, before I got into recovery, I would try to make myself feel superior. Not like to do better than the next, but not to be better, but just so I could be equal. Because I felt in order to be accepted, I had to excel at anything I did. And I could still be that way. If I was with my buddies and we were in the hotel and we wanted to fight, I'd always go and pick against the biggest guy. And I got a lot of shit kicking. That's the way I grew up. Of course, we grew up Catholic, and the old man used to kick my sister and I out of the house on Sunday mornings, and he'd say, go to church, and he'd stay back at home. And we can tell the young kids, I used to walk like 10 miles to go to school with my bare feet, Well, we literally used to have to walk about 5-6 kilometers in the middle of winter, and it'd be minus 25 degrees outside, and we'd have to walk that to get to church. Sometimes it's so bad, we'd walk down the road a mile or so and just hide in a ditch for a couple of hours, and then just walk back home. I think he just wanted to get us out of the house so we could have some peace and quiet. I excelled in school, in primary school. you know, I felt I wasn't very intelligent, but in primary school I did very well. In those days, they used to tell you if you were first or second or 30th in the class, and I was usually near the top. I just had a good memory and I could remember things. I never really did too much homework. I had a brother when I was 14 who was killed in front of the house, and I was babysitting him. He got hit by a car, and he was in a coma for a week, and he died on Christmas Day. So, like, you take all of that, you know, and I haven't even started drinking yet. You know, like, you're envious of what other people have. You feel inferior. You're angry. You're resentful. You know, and so that's a pretty volatile chemistry already. But then you add alcohol. And, of course, this was by this time, I was in the 60s, and there were other substances that were added in there, too. And so, like, I mean, it was a very volatile, if you put all that stuff in a test tube, it's explosive. And when it would put alcohol in me, I'd become explosive. I was very unpredictable. And, you know, when I was 14, I always said there's got to be more in the life than what I was experiencing. And they had a recruitment program for a seminary to become a priest. And I applied and I got accepted. So I went and I lived in a seminary. I was 14 years old at the time. And I was glad. I liked it because, first of all, I was away from the old man. And there was a lot of sports, and I liked sports. Like at 13, 14, I started taking up weightlifting and football, like with real gridiron football with the pads and everything. Of course, we always played hockey. I liked sports. I was good at it, and I enjoyed it. I started drinking when I was 14 also, I think shortly after my brother was killed. I wanted to be accepted, and I drank to get drunk. I didn't drink. I was never a social drinker where I grew up. I don't know. I guess the man next door, I remember him, Gil DeRusha, he was a social drinker, I guess. He'd have a beer once in a while. But he was different. He was, he was an electrician. He was he kept to his own. Didn't hang out at the tavern like the rest of the men did. I quit school when I was 16. I went to my third year of high school, and I hated it by this time. And I just wanted to party, and it was a my son, who is 34 years old now, said he's very envious of me and the time I grew up with the music, and the Beatles and the Stones and all those groups, and cause he just loved them. And it was peace and love, and I think this T-shirt says peace and love, and that's the way we wanted to be. We wanted to be peaceniks, hippies. And so you let your hair grow long, you do lots of substances, and you pretend you're cool. And it was all an act. It was all pretending. And of course, like anything I do, if you took two of something, I take four of something. And so and if you drank two beers, I drink four beers. And I shouldn't say that, because I never drank four beers. I always drank a lot more than that. I drank to get drunk. If I could only have four beers, forget it. If I knew that somebody said, okay, there's four beers and that's your limit for the night, why bother? Like, that's just going to tease me. I drank until I had, no more money, and then I would steal it if I could, or I'd bum it if I could, or whatever. Quit school, went to work, and can I say I just drank a lot from about I had girlfriends off and on, but I was a bit of a troublemaker. I certainly didn't want to hurt anybody, but see, because I wanted to impress you, somebody said, "I dare you to do this," I would do it. And so, that's the way I behaved, and sometimes they were not, the police didn't like that stuff. I didn't get my license till I was 21 because I stole my old man's car when I was 16 and he wouldn't sign for me for my license, and you have to wait till you're 21. I got my license, and the first night I had my car, I got it on a Thursday. On a Friday I was out drinking with my girlfriend, and I had my first car accident, and that was my pattern. I didn't even know how to drive. I didn't even take a driving lesson. Nobody showed me. I turned the corner, I didn't let the steering wheel go so it would go back and the wheels would go straight. I ran into a post. See, in Canada, when you're asked to speak at a meeting, it's usually 45 minutes to an hour. The meeting format is different. So I'll try and cut it short and get to the chase here. I got married when I was 27. We had two kids. By this time, I'd lost my license twice. I still had a job. I owed lots of money. Owed money to the bank, the finance company, the credit union. Borrowed from one to pay the other one. Just keep going around and just getting deeper and deeper into debt. And my wife stayed at home with the kids. And, you know, I just felt that I deserved to go out drinking, at least on Friday and Saturday nights, and if I had some money on Wednesday nights. And I worked hard all week, which was bullshit because I never worked hard. Somebody called me up, a friend Mike, I remember this one incident, my friend Mike says, "What are you doing tonight?" I said, "Oh, gonna go home to the wife and kids," and he said, "Oh, I wanted to know if you wanted to go and shoot some pool and have a few beers," and I said, "No, I better not go, Mike." So I stew about this, and I go home, and I want to be with Mikey. I know he's down at the tavern having a few beers, so I started a fight with the wife, like. I don't know, I'd pick something and I'd start a fight with her. And that way she'd get mad at me, I'd get mad at her and say, "Oh, fuck you," and I'm out of here. And I'd head down and be with Mikey, now I'm happy. And until the next day, of course. My first wife, my poor wife, got fed up with my behaviors and asked me to leave the house. Or she was going to leave the house. We had two young children at home, and I knew that she would look after the kids better than I would, and I was very angry, and I didn't want to leave, but I had no choice. And so, I left the house and went and lived on the couch at my sister's house for 3 months until I got my own place. But, so I was going to work, and I'm falling apart. I'm basically having a nervous breakdown at this point, and I got a subpoena at work. This bailiff walked into the work office I was in, the post office, and gave me a subpoena to appear in court. And just another embarrassment in front of all my colleagues at work. Just goes to prove how much of a loser I am. And so I had to get a lawyer. Family lawyer. So I had this program at work where you could call if you had a personal problem. So I called the guy up and I said, I left a message. He wasn't there. It was on a Wednesday, payday. In those days, you used to give you a check before they had direct deposit. And so, I'd get the check and usually my routine is get paid every second week, and I'd head straight to the bar, cash the check there, and start drinking. So it was 9 o'clock in the morning. I called this guy up, the program that helps you, and he wasn't there. It was a message. I left a message, and So then, you know, I started a couple hours later, 11 o'clock, I said, it's 11 o'clock, I got half an hour, and I'm going to sneak out, and I'm going to head down to the bar. He calls me up at 11. He says, yeah, you wanted to talk to me. I said, yeah, it's a personal problem, you know. Like, he said, yeah, well, that's what I'm here for. I said, well, yeah, maybe I'll go and see you tomorrow or something. He said, well, no, come see me now. And I said, well, I've got other plans right now. And he said, come see me at your lunch hour in half an hour. And I said, yeah, okay. I called him up, so I said, I better go away. So I went and spoke to this guy, and he was a member of AA. I didn't know that. And so I was very ashamed. I mean, I had a lot of suicidal thoughts. I make it sound very casual here, but I was in deep crisis. And I went to see him, and I ended up talking to him for 2 hours. My head is pretty thick sometimes. It takes a while for things to hit home. He connected all the dots. He said, have you ever had a problem with the law? And, well, of course I've had a problem with the law. I've been tried to get impaired driving 3 times. He said, was alcohol involved? Well, yeah, it was drink driving, impaired driving. Has your wife ever said you drink too much? Well, yeah, she's complained about that. Do you have financial problems? Well, why do you have financial problems? It's because you drink too much? No, it's because I bore from this and bore from that. And of course, it was always to go going on binges. And then, have you ever been in an institution because of alcohol? No. Have you ever been to jail? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been to lots of jails. Well, is it because of drinking? No, it's because I was breaking the law. Well, where were you? Like, what were you? Were you drinking when? Well, yeah, I was drinking. Did you ever get into fights? I said, oh yeah, I get into fights. Is it because of drinking? No, it's because he's an asshole. Well, where were you when you got into a fight? Well, I was at the hotel. Like, it just all of a sudden the light bulb went on. Wow, that's it. That's my problem. Alcohol. Oh, thank God, I was relieved. Thank God, that's my problem. Because I thought I was crazy. I really did. Or crazy, weak, immoral, whatever you want the word it is. But I had a real sense of relief. So then he said, well, we can send you to this rehab in 3 days. It's easy to say you got a problem, but like to go to, I had no idea about alcoholism or anything like that. And I just read the book, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And this rehab was down in New Hampshire, which is about a 10-hour drive from Ottawa, from where I live. You got to drive through Quebec and through the woods in Vermont. And it's all woods, bears and wolves. So I reluctantly agreed to go because my wife said she'd take me back if I went to rehab. And I said, oh, okay, that's a way of getting back. So I'll go to rehab. And I didn't drink for the rest of the week. I was so afraid of going to this rehab in New Hampshire that I said, if I need to escape, like I want to have my wits about me so I can get through the woods and get back up to Canada. Off I went. I sat in the group. There was a lot of Vietnam vets there, guys who had a lot of post-trauma stress disorder. I was sitting with these guys and pretending I'm top G.I. Joe, sitting in the group. It's all men in the group. I'm going back home. The wife's taking me back. Things would be cool. After about 2 weeks there, called home. It's just before Christmas. Okay, I'll be home December 24th. Be home with you and the kids for Christmas. Be a nice little Christmas. And she said, you've been gone. It's been so peaceful and quiet. You're not coming back. And like, I went, what? Like, no, you need to go to Al-Anon, then you'll understand. Like, I have a disease. I have a disease, and it's not my fault. And she said, no, you're not coming back. And I was devastated. And so I go into the group. This happened on a Friday. So all weekend, I was like just in like really bad headspace. Monday morning, I'm waiting in the parking lot for my counselor to show up. Paul, you don't understand. She doesn't understand. You got to do something. She said you was going to take me back. He says, well, we'll talk about it in group. So I go to group, and we had two counselors. It was Paul, my counselor, and another counselor. It was about 15 men. And so Paul said, Don, you want to tell the guys what's happened? And so I did, you know, just like I'm talking to you now. And the other counselor, Frank, says, you don't give a shit, eh? What? He says, you don't fucking care. This is the way you're sitting there talking as if there's nothing to it. And like, I just exploded. Like, I jumped across the room. I was going to kill him. But it was all an act. I'm holding everything in. And it was all an act. And that's when my recovery started. And fortunately, they were a strong AA treatment center, and they said, treatment centers can come and go, AA will always be there. And you need support, you will always need support. Go to AA. And actually, that treatment center has closed its doors. And so I started coming to AA, and I felt really safe and secure in that rehab. And I joined a group back in Ottawa, and after a few months, I went to the group conscience, and after a few months, I started to feel safe in my group. You know, I always felt unsafe my whole life. You know, I always had to have my back to the wall, on the bus, in the hotel, any room where there was people, because I needed to see what was coming. And you know, that I think a lot of that comes from being brought up in. It's a stress disorder. You know, you're hypervigilant. And I needed that, and the beer used to give me relief from that. And I started to feel the same relief by coming to meetings. I felt safe. I didn't have to pretend, you know, like I didn't have to act. And that's like, that's in 1982. I was 32 years old then. And it's getting to be a little while ago. And I'm still coming to meetings. I don't take my sobriety for granted. I ended up working in the field of addictions in about six or seven different types of rehabs, a daycare, 3-month programs, all different kinds. And I've literally dealt with thousands of alcoholics and drug addicts. And I've seen too many people die. I was just thinking before the meeting, I'll cut it in a minute. Gary and I, we went camping up in this little town called Howard up here about 6 years ago with some AA members. My wife was with us. Now, we stayed at a fellow AA member's house for 3 nights. The big rains hit and we left. And that AA member came over to the World Conference in 2010, I guess it was. And he came up to Canada, and he visited us, and everything was honky-dory. And then I found out a few months later, he came back. He hung and shot himself in his garage at home because he was starting to get into conflicts with people. I don't know what was going on inside his head. But he was just as, seemed as normal to me as anybody else here. And if that can happen to him, I'm no better. And so I have to talk about what's going on inside me and work the steps. And thanks for listening.
Thanks, Tom.